October the 27th meeting. Are there any errors or omissions from those minutes? Mark, yes?
Page two, actually, page one, the motion at the very bottom. Not making any comments on the wording, just I think a recording procedure. So continuing on to the top of page two, moved by Stephanie, seconded by Mark, motion carried. That motion carried probably should be removed because it was moved and seconded, there was a discussion, then there was an amendment. And again, not commenting on the wording, was the amendment was moved and seconded. And at that point, it should say amendment carried.
Yes.
And then underneath that should say motion carried as amended would probably be a better reflection of how things went.
So the first motion carried should be removed.
Just removed.
The second one should be amendment carried.
Right.
And then we voted on the motion.
And then it should be motion carried as amended.
As amended. Thank you, Mark. I read the motion. I didn't read the details. Anything else? Seeing nothing else, then, with that change, the minutes pass with consent. Business from the minutes. So we have... We have the Southside Schools report, and we began a conversation surrounding the schools on the Southside and the Ernst & Young report. Yes?
Sure.
Oh, could we have Sean's name fixed in the minutes as well?
How do you spell it, John?
S-E-A-N. So under the motion.
Is it H-A-W?
Yeah.
Okay.
On the bottom of page three, you have second and five.
Are you fine with minutes passed by consent still? Okay.
Okay.
Back to the Southside Schools report.
We don't need to do anything.
I heard some conversation concerning Kingsclear School. Is there anyone who wants to make any comment or? No?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm just, the only comment I wanted to make, I was surprised to read in the paper that the mayor of Franklin is against the building of a school in the Hanwell area. I'm not quite sure if he knows all the details of that or not. I guess it will help out the schools in the Franklin area also, but I was a little disappointed to read that.
Yes, he was actually proposing that the new school be built within the Fredericton city limits, right?
Yes.
Yes, Mark.
The only other thing when it comes to Kingsclear, I know that our superintendent has a report coming in January, I think, about functional capacity, and you know, so I know that, you know, we had first talked about maybe not doing any sustainability studies, and I'm not saying we will end up, but I think come January, as far as DEC members, you know, when we receive that report and we look at what our expectations are for the Hanwell area, and that Kingsclear has to be looked at, you know, if we were so inclined as a DEC, that certainly would be an appropriate time to discuss perhaps studying, you know, the feasibility, whether we decide to do it then or decide to do it come the spring or the fall. But it wouldn't necessarily be out of order to start in January.
Right. So am I right in saying that Kingsclear would have been a trigger school?
Yes.
If we hadn't asked for a buy out of those this year. Stephanie.
May I just ask, does the French immersion, the change to French immersion, make
because they finished that, but, there may be.
That'll be taken into consideration.
The biggest thing would be with that recommendation, of realigning the grade configurations in Montgomery Street Elementary School and Connaught Street Elementary School.
Right.
And in doing that, it would mean, French immersion beginning in grade one at Montgomery, which was recommended to be a K to two school, and then French immersion also continuing in Connaught in grades 3 to 5. But that's a little bit down the road, because first of all, we have to make a determination as to which steps from those recommendations we'd like to take. So the whole concept of a K to two and 3 to 5 scenario on the hill in the south side of Fredericton, is something we'll have to talk about at some point. But so French immersion would be impacted there. As of today, French immersion isn't offered at Montgomery, but it is offered at Connaught. And with respect to Kingsclear, right now French immersion is not offered at Kingsclear.
But if enough parents there wanted, I'm just wondering, because it
right.
seemed to be when I listened to the media reports that if enough parents wanted, there is a possibility of various schools getting it.
Sure. Right now, the decision on French immersion is guided by Policy 309, Section 6.4. That talks about the size of classes in the French immersion would need to be similar in size to the classes of English. That I'm paraphrasing that. At Kingsclear right now, there are 5 home rooms, if I understand correctly. So the question would be, would there still be 5 home rooms if French immersion was introduced? That's sort of the threshold according to the policy right now. So right now we've started, and I'll talk about this a little bit later under the French immersion, but we've started the process of gathering that information.
Okay, thank you.
Somebody else have their hand up over here? Okay, Jane.
I guess at first I'll apologize because it was me that asked this to be put on the agenda. Because I was bringing a motion tonight to the meeting that we begin a sustainability study on Kingsclear School to be completed by April. So I'm moving that motion. And the reason that I'm making that motion is because of the Southside report and because of the timing and everything else, that that probably getting this study completed early enough will the report from the province should be out before the sustainability study is done. So it just kind of gets us started on what potentially will be a lot of work in the future.
Do I have a seconder for that motion? Terry? Any other discussion? Heather?
I'm just going back to what my colleague on the other side said. When you look at the study that you're going to be doing, or that the report you're going to be giving in January, and there is still a timeline that would exist if we needed to begin that in January, the 409, would that still fit in, or does it not
well,
work? I'm just wondering, are there pieces of the puzzle that we just don't have? I know we had the study, the Southside Schools report, which is a report, but that hasn't been determined exactly where we'll go with all of that.
Well, the one thing that we determined at the last meeting was that we would support a new school
right.
that would encompass
mm-hmm.
the Kingsclear School and all those other smaller schools.
Right.
The fact that Kingsclear is a trigger school with less than 100 students in it, the timing to do it, to begin tonight versus January allows us an early start in January to the 3 meetings that have to happen. So every sustainability study has to have 3
yes.
meetings.
Yeah.
So this would, if we waited till January, then we wouldn't have that's when we would be making decisions on future sustainability studies for the area.
Yes, Mark.
So, two things. The timeline does allow us to make the motion in January as far as policy and finish up by the spring. So, I mean, whether you're for or against it, I don't think it's, we have to vote for it because of the timeline. The second thing, I would have a concern, not necessarily only for myself, but, I mean, we have council members that have not seen any data whatsoever, which will be presented by our superintendent in January, and I think it would be unfortunate for us to start this process early. I understand for some of us that have been around the table a little longer, but I think we have a policy that will be reported on in January, and we make, and then we are making a decision from a report, not just from, well, let's do it anyway, we all know. So, you know, I just, you know, for that, I'm not for the motion at this time. I think proper process for me, I would feel better that it's done in January. So.
Is there anything to say we couldn't have a motion, approve a motion to do the study but not begin it until after after the January? Are you saying that you think that we should wait until we hear?
I think people have to make a lot of assumptions to pass this motion, because all we had is one report about a new school. And I think if we're to treat all schools equally, meaning that we shouldn't automatically think there should be a study, I think we should wait to hear from our superintendent in an official report. And yeah, you know, we could wait to do the sustainability study, but again, people are making up their minds based on some of us, what we do know, because we've been around, but for some, we're asking them to make, based on the fact, oh yeah, it's a good thing, school here, school there. Well, I guarantee you, it's a King's Clear, an older school with a few students. That school is very important to them, and I think it's a premature decision. If we look at all our own communities, we would want to wait and say, hey, what did you base your decision on tonight? I guess is the question for each one of us. And so that's why I would rather not this be passed tonight. But anyway, that's my opinion.
Any other comments?
If I can. In conducting the study, for those who aren't familiar with it, there are three possible outcomes: the status quo, or the recommendation for significant investment, or recommendation for closure. So in conducting the study, and we saw this in Harvey, for example, in McAdam, for example, at some point along the line, you'll have to decide, are we considering, and I say you'll have to decide it, maybe you'll decide at the very end, maybe you'll decide partway through, but at some point you'll have to decide, are we conducting a study that is dependent upon approval of Hanwell being built, or are we just conducting a study and the outcome is the outcome regardless of the Hanwell decision. So that just needs to be kept in mind.
Any questions on that? Are you ready for the vote?
Question.
All in favor of, do you want to read your motion again?
That we begin a sustainability study on King's Clear School to be completed by April 2017.
All in favor of that motion signify with aye.
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 Contrary minded?
Aye.
I think I need a show of hands. All in favor with your hand in the air, please. And against, contrary?
Nay.
Thank you. Thank you, Wallace. Your hand was in the air. The motion is defeated. Does anyone have any other questions about the Southside study or anything that they addressed at this time? There is a lot there, but it's down the road, right? And we have some things on the go right now that we need to finish up. One of them would be French immersion. Oh, sorry, Heather.
Can I just go back to that? That was a study. That doesn't mean that everything is going to be adopted, and I think that's important to know, and I think it was brought, I think David mentioned that before the presentation. This is a study that was done, but let's not jump to conclusions
right.
with all of it, because there are a lot more pieces of the pie that have to fit together before things can go ahead. So I wouldn't want anybody having the impression that just because a study is done, that determines your conclusion or your outcome. So I guess
that's right.
I just wanted
yeah.
to make sure I was on the right track.
Yes, that's exactly right. And some of it, they are making recommendations that we watch population
mm-hmm.
before
yes.
we. Okay, so back to French immersion. How are we doing, Mr. McTimony?
So we continue moving forward in our plans for the implementation of a grade one entry program for French immersion. Our public meetings have started. The first one was actually here in Woodstock last night at Woodstock High School. It was well attended with over 50, I'm looking, but I don't think, 54 people in attendance. The number of questions is a little bit, there are a little bit more in terms of questions, more questions being asked. Our staff that attended last night did a good job in offering clarifications. We have four more meetings in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and we continue to work with the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development to implement the new entry program as smoothly and as effectively as possible. So the biggest task right now is to see what kind of numbers we're looking at. What kind of numbers are we working with when it comes to students who are showing an interest in starting the grade one immersion program, not to mention the grade three immersion program and the grade six immersion program. So that's where we stand right now with French immersion.
Thank you. Okay. So, I think it was this past weekend. Things have been a little busy. We attended a forum with the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. He actually wasn't present, but he was there on the phone. And one of the questions asked was, are we ready for French immersion? Something along those lines. And he seemed to feel very confident that we're moving ahead. Did you have anything else from that I can't remember?
Well, I mean, the first thing that I don't understand completely is what is the level of confidentiality at a minister's forum?
You got me there.
If they haven't told you to share it, you can't share it. So all confidential unless they have it. That's what I've been told.
Okay.
That's my suggestion. Yeah.
I do have a question.
Sure.
You also attended something else about French immersion a week or two before that.
Yes.
Can you share what that, the one you were invited to, and then specifically the one you were not invited to that day, later that day?
Okay. I was invited as a DEC member to attend, I guess you call it a forum, on how to deliver French language instruction in elementary schools. And I was there for the morning session and not for the afternoon. So the morning session, it was brainstorming, and we talked about all of the ways that we could think of delivering French language instruction and I was thinking about the small rural schools in my area, and that's where most of us were from, and how French language instruction could be delivered, even if it wasn't officially French immersion. So we were to think outside the box and come up with everything that we possibly could in order to come up with some ideas for French language instruction. My understanding is that the afternoon session, they were back inside the box again, and it was, this is what we can afford, this is what could be done, and most of our wild and wonderful ideas were not feasible. That's my understanding. I haven't received a report from that. But I did understand that the person who had organized it had to the end of this month, the end of November, to come up with a plan for delivering French language instruction to elementary schools in the province.
This is an issue that belongs with DECS because they are elected and they are local representatives. And I must say I find those comments pretty hollow when it comes to French immersion and our chair is invited to a morning session, but yet is not extended the invitation to the afternoon session. You know, I think to me it speaks volumes to how they really look at the role of the DECS and the chair in education, and something as important as, you know, French immersion entry point, not delivering curriculum, which we're not responsible for, but entry point, when we are, as was stated, I think not sincerely, but it was stated officially in the paper by the minister, that we are the locally elected representatives for education. And I just feel it's really unfortunate that you were not part of those afternoon discussions. And I think the Department of Education needs to apologize for how they treated you then, and since I'll group it together, and also how they treated you and how they treated the DAC in announcing that we are now responsible for transportation. I don't think it was professional. I don't think it was courteous in any way. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
I'll just respond with one item, and that is that I wasn't at that forum as the DECS chair. We were asked for names of people who would like to attend, and so I was selected maybe because I came from an area with rural schools, but I was there as a DECS member, not. But yes, I appreciate your comment.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Wallace.
Yeah, I was also a little disappointed too in that same session, I guess, and I guess I was given the same data that Mark was given, that again, it was an open session in the morning as in a brainstorming session, everything on the table. And then from what I'm hearing is that the principals were held back in the afternoon. I'm not sure all the principals, but I know principals from the rural schools, and they was basically stated, here's the way we're going to do it. To me, that's a totally waste of money to invite people in to do a session like that and then turn around and tell them how things are going to be done. So I'm along the same lines as Mark. I'm a little disappointed in how things was handled by EECD, I guess, and like I say, to plan a session like that and a waste of public time and going to attend a session and then turn around and say, here's how we're going to do things. Anyway, that's my opinion on the whole thing.
I can offer to take that to our Council of DECS chairs and to the minister's huddle the next time around. Yes.
Going on with decisions,
surprised, and we will have some, well, they have to come up with something for delivery of French language to the rural schools, so we'll have to wait on that. Anything else? Leo Hayes High School Catchment Review, Mr. McTominay.
So we're still on schedule for our catchment area implementation plan. We've finished two of the three public meetings, with the third one to be next Monday night at Leo Hayes High School. I've already met with staff at least once formally, and we have a few other meetings scheduled to try and brainstorm and take into account the feedback that's been provided and will be provided, and I'll prepare a report to present to you at our next public deck meeting, which is on Thursday, December the 8th. And if I understand correctly, according to the plan, you'll listen to the report and ask some questions, and then in January we have a working session planned where you can dig in a little bit deeper, and then in January at the public meeting, it's my understanding that you'll reach some kind of decision on whether to maintain the status quo, which is a motion that you've already passed, or to adjust the plans based on anything that may or may not come out in a set of recommendations. Third public meeting is at Leo Hayes on Monday night. They've been fairly well attended, in the 50s both nights, I think.
Closer to 20 than the second.
Second night, yeah.
Second night was about 20.
Second was 20. First night was about 50.
Any questions?
What time Monday night, you said?
6:30.
All right, moving on to new business and busing. Mark, did you have a question, or would you just like me to pass this on to Mr. McTominay to give a report on what he's...
Go ahead.
Okay.
So, last week, an announcement was made that the province was withdrawing its question that it had presented to the courts to rule about the sharing of busing. And the Department of Education developed a provincial policy, that basically said the decisions made surrounding busing rests at the local level, the district level, with the district education councils, and that so any further decisions would be made at this level. It got significant media attention. It's been a conversation piece for sure. I think at some point there has to be two discussions within our organization as Anglophone West. There has to be a discussion with staff to talk about the or to discuss the possibilities, the options. Would it be good? Would it not be good? The pros, the cons, the numbers. There also has to be a discussion at this table with the District Education Council about your ideas as to whether it's something that we should pursue. And then, based on the outcomes of these two conversations, if indeed it's something that we think is worthwhile in pursuing, we obviously need a partner, and that would be with the Francophone system. Our district overlaps with two Francophone districts, Francophone South, and the impacted areas would be the City of Fredericton and Town of Oromocto, and Francophone Northwest, and the impacted communities would be Grand Falls and Edmundston. Those would be, those would be the four main communities. So that's basically where it stands right now, and maybe something that we want to talk about at this table in the future, and something that I'll engage with when it comes to working with staff.
Mark.
So, quick question. Going back to your opening comments, we had a meeting with the MLAs on Tuesday night. This was released Wednesday. How much notice were you given that this was being released before, from the time that you were told that when it was released?
Me?
Kimberly.
Kimberly.
Somewhere around 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Okay.
Now, in all fairness, there was a call arranged for an hour earlier, and it had to be postponed for some reason.
So obviously, I think the department should extend an apology. Just, I mean, I'm beyond words, but we gotta move beyond that. And all the words that Minister Kenny said, I don't believe are sincere, or he would have told us ahead of time. I felt the congeniality of the night before was washed down the drain with what I would consider nothing but a stunt on a Wednesday. It was very disappointing. That's just my frustration. But going back to the business at hand, the question is, should it be DEX first or staff first? Because it says that it is the responsibility of the DEX. So the question is, do we as a DEX contact our Francophone counterparts and say, do you want us to pursue working together? And if the answer is possibly, then staff can put time into a report to us. If they say no, never, then as a DEC, would we want a report from staff? And I'm not sure what should come first, but that's just, you know, a question I'm throwing out there to Kimberly or Dave.
Yes, well, my immediate reaction will be some things, you know, like finance, we wait for a budget proposal before we discuss it. We don't discuss the budget before we have a proposal from staff. So there are some things that we wait for staff on, but that's a good question. Do you have an opinion on that?
I suppose it wouldn't hurt to reach out. It could be a letter to perhaps a letter co-authored by the chair and the superintendent to those particular chairs and superintendents. So some might say that busing is an operational matter, and so when it's left to district education councils, I'm not sure if they mean district education councils as sit at the council table and make decisions, or district education council as the governing body of the organization that makes the decision. So, and I say that not really knowing.
No, and I mean, I view it as operational, but I know for us, it's we're building a policy from scratch, and there will have to be a policy, and it will be, you know, basically you reporting on it, but yeah, you'll be doing the work. It's just, I'm just wondering, I don't know how much work that you're going to have to do ahead of time if the Francophones are not interested at all, and that would be my concern. And I haven't seen the policy. Has it been written already?
It has been. I could show it to you.
Yeah. And is this is a provincial policy?
Yes. I'm sure there's a faster way to get here, but this is the way I know.
What's your policy number, David?
714, I think.
You can't see through that phone?
314?
Not quite.
maybe. There's transportation, 514. 514. Here's the policy. So the policy provides assistance interpreting the Ed Act as it relates to transportation to and from school. In divisions where we would like to share resources. It applies to us as a council and a district. These are the legal considerations and the authority that allows for the policy to be written. So that's just giving the go ahead. Here are the goals and principles of the policy. Committed to ensuring students are transported to and from school in a secure manner. Our system is organized and administered on the principle of linguistic duality. Recognize the existence of two distinct education sectors. Purpose of promoting and preserving each official linguistic community. Department believes in shared management of schools with district education councils. Committed to respecting the constitutional obligations of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Gonna steal some of Karen's power. And then here are the requirements or standards. So the responsibilities of district education councils, in accordance with this, the authorities provided under the Education Act and with its constitutional obligations. So you folks should ensure that the pupil transportation is managed according to the needs of pupils and the resources of our district, and determine the terms of cooperation of sharing of resources with other district education councils. So there's a role. The second, responsibilities of the superintendent. There's the regulation 2001-51 that's established under the Ed Act. Need to make sure our transportation is done safely and allows us to enter into a conveyance contract if necessary. And we can develop policies that are consistent with or more comprehensive than the provincial policies. And then there are the references.
Are you interested in making a motion on communication?
You know, from reading it, my second thought would be that you wouldn't necessarily have to reach out to the council, unless you felt that you wanted to, because really what we need to do is either A, pass a motion giving David direction, or if people aren't comfortable with that, passing a policy of which David will take his direction automatically from him. And I don't think it should be done tonight, but I think the short-term solution for me, and I'm just thinking about it, I know we're all processing this, is that I think we can come up with a resolution, whether in December or January, that says, you know, in essence, David, go do your job and report back to us on what you find. And he would know that, I guess, we support whatever he's going to do. I mean, it is basically his work, and we would have to trust him. I would be willing to make a motion before a policy is in place, but if people want a policy, I think we have plenty of time to make a policy before we send him out to do his job. So that's where I'm at, just working on the policy.
Anyone else have any feelings on that in one way or another? I'm happy to leave it until. Further comments on busing? I would like to read into the minutes a motion that was passed during our in-camera session, moved by Miriam and seconded by Heather, that pursuant to paragraph 5.4 of the Councillor's Code of Conduct, a complaint dated November the 3rd, 2016, shall be referred to Tamara Nicole for consideration, investigation, and review, followed by a report to Council in accordance with paragraph 5.4 of the Code. And I have that for for people who would be interested in working on our policy committee and starting off with travel policy. And I know that Mark is chomping at the bit, so his name's already on the list. Andrew, great. Sean, perfect.
I would love to take part.
Good, Wallace. I thought you might have gone away somewhere.
No, I'm still here.
Good, good.
I can say from past policy work that, you know, the more the better, because, you know, you just are able to bounce things off, and working with two or three is just, I don't find it as efficient, and, you know, it'd be great to have whoever.
How often and where do you meet?
Well, you know, we would try to meet on the days we have meetings and try to meet earlier. If that doesn't work as people's work schedule, then we would try to find a consistent day that people can block off. So it depends who volunteers who will work with that schedule.
I'm interested.
Stephanie, Mark, Sean, Andrew, Wallace. And that leaves us a little lacking from upriver. That doesn't mean that committee is solid. We can have members join. And I agree with Mark. If we have six people on a committee and one person can't make it, then that's fine. If you have three people on a committee and one person can't make it, then the other two end up with more work. So are you nodding yes you'd like to be on the committee, Heather? No, okay. Just give it a bit.
Give it a bit.
It's early.
On when you're
yeah.
Meeting and
yeah.
All that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, and the committee will let us know when they're meeting
in case
other people want to attend. Good. And we have an outside, an external committee, which is the Committee on Healthy Fundraising, and they have asked that for some reason, I can't figure out why, they want Terry Bond on their committee.
They want him back.
They want him back. He served with them when he was on the council in the past, and they'd like to have him back on the committee again. Is there anyone else who's interested in serving on that committee?
No, but I just wondered a refresher on what that committee is or does.
Sure. Terry, can you?
Well, it's a part of the Health Advisory Board, and we're looking at your fundraising, the choices that are being made, food wise and things, as far as cookie dough and all of those kinds of things that sometimes are used for fundraisers, and trying, the committee itself is trying to come up with new approaches to unhealthy fundraising has raised money-wise.
Does that answer your question?
Sure.
So
tell them to be reasonable, Terry. Just tell them to be reasonable.
Well, I've been...
It's only fundraising. It's not eating it every day.
I've been telling them every meeting that, you know, you can't legislate. You have to educate.
That's his motto.
That's his motto. And they still want him, so, okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Wallace.
I read in the, I'm not sure where the other day, but I see policy 711 is going to be reviewed. I think that's the healthy fooding one. I think
yeah.
It's 711, isn't it, or 709?
711, yes.
Okay. Is that part of this committee's work?
No.
No.
Okay.
But I'm sure they will be interested in the review when it comes out. Okay,
okay,
see.
I did read that the other day, that was part of the minister, I guess, is going to look at that that policy review, I guess.
Yes. So, Terry, we will send your name on, or you can call them and say I'm back, or however we'll do that. Thank you. So we're into the superintendent monitoring reports.
So, two superintendent monitoring reports tonight, And before we do, I'd like to introduce the wonderful staff that I work with, day in and day out. Tonight we have Karen Morton, who's here, Director of Human Resources, filling in for Carol as minutes. Carol's on vacation, having a great time, I'm sure. Jay Kolpitz is the Director of Schools for the Woodstock Education Center. Sue Young is the Supervisor of Data and Accountability. Gina Dunnett is the Alignment Champion. And Catherine Blaney is the Director of Education Support Services. Jason Humphrey is the Director of Communications. So a good turnout for staff tonight. We appreciate them being here. Some of them will step in and help me out as we work our way through these reports. The reports are there for you. They'll also be posted publicly in the near future, probably when Carol comes back. So I won't read word for word, but when it comes to report ER2 on academic excellence, I will call that up. And just note a few things here before I ask for some staff to step in as well here. So academic excellence is reported upon twice a year, and you can see that we do have DEC policy that calls for expectations. I note here that the priorities for academic excellence for our District Education Council during the period of 2012 to 2016, we have that MB3 focus, the critical thinking skills, the promotion of teaching excellence and extending student learning. But that timeline, we are soon coming to an end, so that might be something we want to think about for the future. All of those are important priorities, and some of them are actually provincial priorities now when you think about the 10-year education plan. I talk a little bit about the staff that we have in place at the district office to support teachers in their professional learning. We have a district improvement plan that's been developed. It's been created in a collaborative way, and we have baseline data that supports our priorities, supports our goal. We have well-established goals. It's a 3-year district improvement plan that ends in at the end of 2017. And when we go to revise this plan and create our new DIP is the name that we give it, the District Improvement Plan, we'll make sure that there's a strong alignment to the 10-year education plan. We also have a positive learning and working environment plan. Unfortunately, the PLWEP doesn't flow as easily as the DIP. But that positive learning environment, working environment plan is also in place and also posted for you to review. Those plans are also posted publicly, so they're posted for you in the portal, but they're also posted publicly on our website. And those plans are meant to help guide us as a district in moving forward. I've made some mention here of some professional learning that has taken place this year, as recent as last month and at the beginning of the year. I've also noted here that that literacy, numeracy, and science leaders continue to work very hard at supporting teachers. With their team, supporting teachers in their instructional practices. There's a summary as an appendix to this report that you can have a look at that talks about some of the initiatives and some of the professional learning that might be going on some ideas for the future. When it comes to the district improvement plan, we're continually monitoring it. We have a monitoring committee, actually, that is very faithful at reviewing the goals and looking at the strategies and monitoring the success, the measures that we have in place to see how we're doing. It's worth I mentioned a little bit earlier about staff. It's worth noting that with the new 10-year education plan, there's been the development of what we're calling a priority unit, provincial, and with this priority unit, there has been a couple of those objectives from the 10-year ed plan that are considered priorities right out of the gate. And of course, we're looking at numeracy and literacy in those primary grades. We have seen an investment in staff. We have additional leads that serve as coaches in the area of numeracy and literacy. Also noted is the additional staff in terms of diversity and respect and intervention planning. This is to acknowledge that our classrooms need assistance sometimes with the learning environment. And finally, I noted earlier the district alignment champion. That's Gina's position to provide leadership in directing the movement forward. The education sports services team also consists of a number of leads that support areas in education support services. One of the main priorities from the province is a focus on formative assessment, and we are continuing to provide professional learning opportunities and promote formative assessment as a means of improving instructional practices in our classroom. Of course, we're up to speed when it comes to report cards. That's been something that the council has been watching over the last couple of years, and Anglophone West is a leader in the movement to K-8 new report card. We have carried on with the practice of school reviews. This is a format that helps schools to reflect, not only self-reflect, but have a team of educators come in and examine the practices in the school and offer advice and support in moving forward. We continue to focus on that as a way of school improvement, and in fact have 7 of them planned this year. This has moved from a department responsibility to a district responsibility. A lot of partnerships that have been mentioned as well, and I think it's important to note that that we organize and share our data on achievement through a variety of sources. This data certainly helps us as we construct and monitor our district improvement plan and positive learning and working environment plan. But we have an obligation under the Education Act to report on this, and really this monitoring report covers that expectation. It's worth noting that all provincial achievement results across the province are available publicly online. So that's the basics of this report. You'll see a few appendices here. You'll see that Appendix A. It's in a separate attachment. That's the district improvement plan and the positive learning and working environment plan. I'm not going to open those up, but they're worth having a look at sometime to examine the goals and the strategies and the measures and the timelines and the baseline data that we're using to help us as we strive to improve. Appendix B and C are attached to this. Some additional reading on literacy, numeracy, and science initiatives and points of interest, as well as the K-8 report card. And then finally, the assessment results. Again, these are separate attachments. One is a PowerPoint presentation, and I'll ask Sue to maybe take 5-6 minutes to sort of just walk you through that. And then the last one, it's the same information, but more in an executive summary. So, And I know if I scroll down, this would show you all of the information that I've listed here about literacy, numeracy. So I'll call up Sue's PowerPoint here, and worth just spending about 5 minutes. This these are the assessment results specific to not only to this is both province and our district,
province
is right? That's right. So, Sue, do you want to like stand there and I'll click? Is that the best way to do it? Okay. Jay has seen this before.
Wallace, do you have that PowerPoint?
I do. I haven't placed me yet.
Okay,
I can hear everybody, so.
Great.
So, yes, as Mr. McKimmony said, I'm just going to take about 5 minutes and just share some numbers with you, really. So, talking about the assessments from 2015-2016, the ones that I'll show you the results for were the ones that were written at grade 2 reading, grade 9 reading, the English language proficiency assessment, the grade 10 and grade 12 French second language oral proficiency assessments, and the grade 6 assessments in reading, math, and science. So starting with grade 2, of the 5,080 second graders registered in the English Prime Program, 73.8% met or exceeded the appropriate achievement levels. And so 73.8 compared to last year at 76.9, that just shows a decrease of 3.1%.
This is for the province first, right?
And this is provincial. And of these students, 51.9 attained at the appropriate achievement level and 21.9 attained the strong achievement level. So this is a district results graph. And so we do see that in Anglophone West, we had 1,705 students. And of those 1,705 students, 75.2% of students achieved at the appropriate or above levels. And if you look at that compared to the province, we're above the province, because the province was 73.8. And really, if you look at that in terms of the province and districts across, we're doing quite well. In the grade 9 ELPA, 5,063 students were registered in this assessment. 80.4% met or exceeded the appropriate achievement level. And if you look at the graph, you'll see that since 2008, that line graph just continues to increase. There was a bit of a dip in 2015, but it's back up to 80.4. So doing quite well. 72.3% of these students attained appropriate achievement, and 8.1 attained strong.
And it's worth noting here, Sue, that the target is 100% because it's a graduation requirement, isn't it?
If we look at the district comparison, this is where it really shows how well Anglophone West is doing. We had 1,638 students registered in this assessment. 82.8% scored in the appropriate or higher achievement level. That's above the province at 80.4. And really, within the last 3 years, we've been above the province. This breaks it down by program, and the trends of the percentage of students that are appropriate and above by program on this assessment over several years indicates that early French immersion and late French immersion students consistently outperform English Prime. And so if you look at the results, early French immersion 91.9, late French immersion 92.6, English Prime 72.5.
So, excuse me, when you're looking at the entire province, that's French and English combined, right?
So grade 10, French second language oral proficiency. This is assessment that's done every 2 years. It's from a random sample of about 10% of students. And of 965 students registered at grade 10, 45% met or exceeded the intermediate level. And if you look at Anglophone West, that's 44.1% of our students. It was 297 students, but that's up from 32.1% from last year.
This group is the last group who would have gone into grade 1 entry immersion, if I understand correctly.
That I'm not certain.
Is it?
Do you know that? I'm looking at Gina because Gina was in the position that
is
I'm
it,
in.
Is it just early
year.
Immersion or is it French across the board that's assessed here?
It's French.
This.
I should just get quiet.
Grade 10
French
immersion.
This year's grade 10 French immersion is
the last
one. The last
one? That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. But is this French second language oral proficiency? So is it just immersion kids that are tested, or
kids
is it
that are in grade 10 French immersion.
Kids that are in grade 10 French immersion? And by the time grade 10 rolls around, early and late have combined in together. That's right. So this is a French immersion assessment, not a prime, or not just early or just late. It's immersion in total.
So in essence, 44.1% of the students who took French immersion in Anglophone West are not proficient to get a government job. Because they have to be advanced or higher, I believe, isn't that?
And the level of looking at the proficiency scale, they would have only achieved intermediate.
This is grade 10, so they're not quite done their studies,
right.
But this is a
and
a
if you look at intermediate, part of that description would say that they're able to satisfy routine social demands and limited requirements. Language is awkward, so.
And just to clarify, it does include post-intensive French as well.
Oh, it does.
Keeping in mind it only happens every 2 years, and it's a sample.
Right. So that's an important point, that it includes post-intensive French.
Okay.
Now it's just immersion when we get to grade 12.
It's immersion. So grade 12, French second language oral proficiency. This is the early immersion. So these are students who would have entered at early immersion.
Grade 1?
Grade 3?
They'd be combined. These students would have, if they enrolled in early immersion, they would have started in grade 1. If they enrolled in late immersion, they would have started in grade 6.
Okay.
But by the time they get to grade 12, the two are combined. So there's no.
So this is grade 1, not grade 3?
Correct.
You're here. So looking at that, then the results are 451 grade 12 early immersion students, 41.7 of them exceeded the met or exceeded the advanced proficiency level. So that's a high, if you look at Anglophone West, that's 48.9% of students, which is above province and above the other districts.
Huh. We have to go back and repeat ourselves. That was, or they did delineate early and late. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So here's early and now
and
late.
And now we're getting to late.
Because they have different targets. I'm sorry.
And then we will also have post-intensive.
And then we'll also have post-intensive, right.
But do we have the number of students, just out of curiosity, that would have started? Because by grade 12, we have a number of students in French immersion that have dropped out. So I'm just being
I don't don't have it at my fingertips, but it's something we could find.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at late immersion, and we're looking at 214 grade 12 late immersion students that were assessed. 52.3 met or exceeded the intermediate plus oral proficiency level.
So why is that the target?
Why is 85% the target?
Why is intermediate the target?
Good question.
Just
is that a provincial target?
Yes.
The provincial target, you mean how do they determine the target?
No, why is intermediate plus the target when you have to have superior or advanced to be considered bilingual?
That's a good question. I had a similar conversation today with one of our French subject coordinators, and it really depends. I mean, David has the sheet that that has the indicators for what would be expected within each of those areas. But the, when I was speaking with one of our subject coordinators today, she talked about the fact that it depends on what a student wants to be able to do with their French. It's not always about being able to get a job and be in the civil service, which oftentimes in public we sometimes think that. But so depending on where a student is, you know, wanting to achieve with their French, there could be some students who are in late immersion that surpass that target, depending on their, you know, desire. But maybe David can talk a little bit about what it looks like.
Well,
for our
And some have reached the advanced plus, but very few.
Right, if you compare it to working as a teacher, for instance, our French immersion teachers, according to policy, we strive for them to have superior, and our French prime teachers, we strive for them to have advanced plus. And the target for late immersion is intermediate plus, and the target for early immersion is
advanced.
So
none of those people that were educated in your teaching system will qualify to teach in that system.
Unless they continue to improve.
They continue to go on.
But this is graduating from high school, so before they become a teacher, they'll go on to study for 5 more years at the university level.
In French?
If they want to be a French immersion teacher, that's highly recommended. Yeah. And a little shout out to those who are embarking on studies in education. If they choose French as a direction, then the outlook looks promising for them.
Not so much if you're
Well, David, just a couple of things as well. It's the same with someone who graduates from high school and has taken a shop class or auto mechanics. They can't go, they got a further education.
Sure.
And, you know, the good thing about language, it is a skill that can be learned. You know, but I do think the government's got to get serious with making sure it's in every school. In every community, or access to every community. Because, you know, we are a bilingual province.
Right.
But
so to clarify, French learning happens in every community,
right,
but French immersion isn't in every community.
Well, French immersion needs to be in it.
That's what you're suggesting.
Yes, French immersion. People need to have access to French immersion. Right now, there's limited access in some circles, so that's another discussion, but, you know.
David's ringing.
So the next one's going to be post-intensive.
That's right.
So now we're looking at the post-intensive French students and Anglophone West, 32.6, and the province was 32.8. And again, the level to attain there is intermediate or above. And we look at grade 6 reading. This was the first year that it was actually, that the results were actually released for us to have a look at publicly. 5,006 grade 6 students from all the programs, so that would be your early French immersion, your grade 6 entry, grade achievement level. So that's in the province.
Can you just go back one, just for a quick second?
So that level one that is below, includes students who would have been exempted and or did not write. Are you looking at that?
I am now.
Okay.
So where does that number come from?
Twenty-five, so.
Plus 20, oh, I see, okay, yes.
Right, so at appropriate, there was 25.7, high appropriate 20.3, and strong 8.1%. For a total of 54.1%.
Something that's worth noting in the grade six results, are the levels. So you'll notice that it's ranged from level one to six, whereas in the past, when you think about our grade two, results, or those results were either below appropriate or strong achievement. This gives us a little bit more information as to where our students actually falling in their skills. And so when you look at our level, we're aiming for level four is appropriate. Level three, you can see we have, you know, 21.3% who are approaching, which means that they're, you know, they're close, not quite there yet, but close.
So the question would be, since the grade twos are doing well, where is, what's happening after between grade two and then grade six?
That's the question.
What defines close?
What defines close?
Mm-hmm.
We need to have some coffee to have that discussion.
And so if you want to look at how that looks for the districts, those are the percentages. And Anglophone West was at 53%. Broken down by programs, again, we're looking at students that would have been in the grade French or the grade six French immersion. Students who entered at grade three and then English prime, and the percentages are there: 63.2% for French immersion grade six, 71.1% for students who were early immersion, and 41.5% for English prime.
Wow, that's such a telling graph.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, it is. It just, yeah.
It is, Heather. You're right. Absolutely.
And so when we think of moving the program back to grade one, we can anticipate what we're going to see.
Okay. Now the graph for mathematics. 5,006 students in grade six. 20.2 met or exceeded the appropriate achievement levels in math. And then if you look at how many of those students were at the appropriate level, 10.9, high appropriate, 6.2, strong, 3.1.
That's French and English. Do you have it separated?
Graph after this one, the graph after this one. So we have, so if we want to break it down by district, we can take a closer look at Anglophone West. And we see that in Anglophone West, 18.8% of our grade six students. 1,710 students in Anglophone West, 10.6 of those were at appropriate, 5.3 at high appropriate, and 2.9 at strong.
I'm not a huge fan of overtesting, but I think when you don't have a math assessment until grade 6, we can't be completely surprised. We have, and it's a new assessment,
I can just point out, like if you look back to 10 years ago, you know, we started very low in grade two reading, and then we made investments, we worked hard at it, and you can see we brought it up almost 25% over time due to that very focused, intentional support to primary literacy. And I think what we need to do is put that same intentional focused support back into our system. And that's what we've started now with the additional coaching that we have.
David?
Yes?
Is our focus a little different now than what it used to be? Like, I remember when you were back talking about, like, from 2004 to 2010 in that area, we used to have literacy leads in the schools, right?
That's right. And I guess you didn't see me flip back, but I flipped back, Wallace, to the grade two slide. But that's exactly what happened back in those early 2000 years. There was an investment in literacy leads. And everybody committed to an uninterrupted literacy block in the mornings. It was very very focused and intentional.
We had a literacy lead in every school at that time, though, right?
That's correct. Well, in our district, we certainly did, and perhaps throughout the province, it may have looked a little different, but.
But with our math, we're doing now. Is that not being done in a different way, like as in coaching the teachers or something? They're not spending as much time with the children, are they?
They're in classrooms.
They are in classrooms.
Coaching teachers on working with students.
And they're coaching teachers and working with students, so there's some co-teaching going on and co-planning and working together in assessment, so working together, but they are in classrooms.
And there's just so many weeks at each school, is it?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's fluid, Gina says. We don't have enough to put one in every school.
Yep.
So the last part is science?
The last part is science, and it pretty much tells the same story.
Right.
25.7% in the province, 25.9% in Anglophone West. And then if you look at it broken down again by program, English Prime again is the lowest at 20.1%.
It's promising to see that. It's discouraging, of course, to see 25.7, but if you look at the bar of green that's showing approaching, that
means
a lot of students that are close. So that's promising. We also have perception surveys that are available for the public to see. Yes?
Look at the strong achievement, that seems to be trending down consistently over the 3 years. So can you
we're seeing more and more collaboration across the four district these days than ever before. Before it used to be four, how many Anglophone districts were there? Nine Anglophone districts, I think, but now there are four, and the directors under certain umbrellas are in regular communication, likewise the superintendents, so you see that greater collaboration.
So, David, if you look at a school and you say, okay, well, we're down, but really it's two schools that brought us down, like, do you look at that data, or is it just down, every school has brought us down, and we're just down, or?
Access to the school by school data, and we identify schools that need additional support, that we need to speak with, that we need to support at perhaps a higher level, and we can identify those stronger schools that are doing stronger with the results, and examine what's working well in your school, and so there is that sharing that occurs. We count on schools themselves digging in deep, digging into the data, and because there's much more data that they receive, that things are broken down into strands, you know, so they might see that on one particular topic they're doing really, really well, and on another topic maybe they're not doing so well. They might be able to identify a teacher, and they might even be able to link that to a teacher, so maybe a teacher has a certain strength in a certain area where another teacher might need support in a different area. So that data is accessible to them.
So when it comes down to the teacher, is it the principal that says, okay, well, this, you've been struggling a couple of years, we're going to move you to this subject and put another teacher there, or is that something you do, or
nope.
Is that something you just don't do at all?
Yeah, that the authority rests with the principal when it comes to a teaching assignment. So the principal has the authority to move a teacher within their school to a different assignment, but it's that authority changes quite a bit when it comes to moving a teacher out of a school and into another school. But within the school, that authority rests with the principal.
Who's responsibility from one school to the next?
That would be more as an employer. District, the superintendent or the director, and there has to be a legitimate reason that would fall under the collective agreement.
Now, just one question, because there's been a lot of talk since this. Everyone's trying to find either a reason or someone to blame it on, you know. But it's been said publicly that there's not enough teachers on the front line, and I don't fully understand what that means in terms of when I think of that. I'm thinking, oh. Some classrooms where there's two teachers, and because they've cut teachers, now there's only one. Like, what specifically does that mean? Because, I mean, that's one of the first things I said. They're cutting teachers on the front line. So, what does that mean?
What hasn't changed is the fact that teachers are assigned based on a formula. And when we see fluctuation in enrollment, then it's possible we can see fluctuation in teachers. And the number of teachers at any particular school. But the process remains the same. So when it comes to the number of classroom teachers teaching the number of kids in our schools, nothing has changed with that assignment. Some might say teachers on the front lines because the investment has been made in district leads. And those leads have a responsibility to be co-teaching, co-planning, working with teachers to try and help them become better teachers. So some might argue, why aren't those teachers, in the classrooms? But there is some value in the setup that we have now with respect to competent, qualified, leaders within our system trying to support classroom teachers in becoming better classroom teachers. we're continuing to staff teachers in the classrooms the same way we have been all along. Ready for ER7?
Everybody ready?
Yes.
This is the potato harvest report.
That's right. So this report is now once a year, presented in November. We have a team of Director of Curriculum Instruction, Director of Schools, and Principal that provide leadership in this area. This is a DEC policy that was put in place just prior to amalgamation and one that continued with our new District Education Council in 2012. And it's the Potato Harvest Enhancement Plan is a plan that supports students in grades 8 to 12 from the Carleton County area who wish to participate in the annual fall potato harvest during instructional time. Most of the students we see are of high school age and they come from Carleton North High School. Parent permission is required. It's in the fifth year of existence, and the plan allows students to miss up to 15 days of school during the harvest. There are some specific instructions for me as superintendent, and one of them is to write to the president and executive director of Potatoes NB, which I do at the beginning of each year, to renew support for students working in the harvest, and I ask the president and executive director to share this letter of support with the farming families. You can see that letter as an appendix. Registration for the plan begins in April of the year prior to some parent information sessions in September, and then of course the harvest begins shortly after. We had about 40 parents in attendance at the parent meeting in early September. You can see the number of participants for this school year. We had it placed at 53. It's down from previous years. There are some students who have self-identified as sharing placements to minimize their time away from school. Administration's going to continue to explore this, and it'll also be a part of focus group meetings. We have revised the tracking system that accurately codes and reports student absences due to the harvest. We have a bank of supply teacher days to help support the classroom teacher and the students when it comes to catching up. Of course, the theme of the Potato Harvest Enhancement Plan is that students are missing school over the course of 3 or 4 weeks so that they can actively participate during the day in the potato harvest. Talk a little bit about the team that takes the lead, and I'm appreciative of Jay as the Director of Schools and Diane Kay as Director of Curriculum and Instruction who represent the district, and the principal and admin team monitors student needs at the school level. There will be a follow-up meeting in December and then a student focus group in January to gather additional feedback on how things are going with the Potato Harvest Enhancement Plan. Now, we did talk about some recommendations. Our staff has analyzed the DEC policy, and we have drafted some recommendations for change in the policy. This is things have evolved over the last 5 years, and I know that there's a policy group that is going to gather and work on developing and renewing the DEC policies as a whole. But this one has sort of been floating now for about half of a year, and you'll see in the appendix below the recommendations that have been made by staff who are working closely closely with the program. Of course, the DEC has shown a strong interest in the program and created a subcommittee of its own. They collected feedback from farmers through a survey. There were 20 farmers that responded, and a subcommittee presented in April of last year. They presented a summary of results and a committee report with recommendations. The Director of Curriculum and Instruction and I have had an opportunity to review those recommendations, and I can tell you that some of them have been accomplished in part or in full. And further to this, they'll serve as a catalyst for conversation with students and farmers and staff for the future. So when we look at the, as I continue to scroll down, this is just a copy of the email and the letter that I sent to the executive director and the president to send along to families. And this is a look at the registration form. And here in this appendix, you can see in red the staff recommendations for changes to the DEC policy. And this just comes from looking at the DEC policy and sort of modernizing it from its original writing 5 years ago. So you can see that those recommendations are made in red. Actually, you've already made a few little changes. We've moved it from two times a year to once a year, and we've changed it from October to November. And then we can, as I move through here, you can see that I've included the summary of feedback from the subcommittee, and we've already talked about this. I've just put it in as a reminder. This was presented to council in April. So I say we've already talked about it. I guess it was the former DEC, and you're a new DEC now. Some of you were at that table, but it's available for your review. And then, so this is a summary of the survey that was conducted with 20 farmers responding. And then this is their final report. It offers the timeline. And then the presentation in April, and then these are the recommendations that were made. So when it comes to adopting changes to DEC policy, that would require a motion. That may be something that you want to save for the policy committee, but it's there for your review.
Miriam, are you the only member of that committee left on council?
Present time.
So I would see that if we leave this to our policy committee, they might reach out to you when they get to looking at that too.
I don't have any data.
No, but the numbers are there, just to make sure that.
Just your opinion.
Yeah. I just hate to see the efforts of that committee maybe overlooked in any way because of the work done. So I know the person who's looking after the policies will remember that. So was there any quick explanation for that big drop again this year?
Couple of things that we talked about. First of all, over the last 5 years, enrollment is actually on the decline at Carleton North High School too. So there's a proportional, whether it's exactly correlated or not, I can't say statistically, but we have seen a decline in enrollment. We tend to see students in grade 12 having a renewed sense of obligation to school and not wanting to miss time. I think we see that a little bit more. Those would be two big things that seem to jump out at me right now.
Yeah. Jane didn't agree with that last comment.
The
number would be a little higher also because we have a number of students in schools such as Hartland.
also seeing students who are choosing to work after school and on weekends. So this is a count of those who are actually enrolled in the program and missing the instructional time.
Our hope is that in January, 2 years ago, Diane and I met with the students and we brought them in and we supplied with 10 bedroom cookies and just asked them maybe 4 or 5 questions. Like, okay, we're good cookies.
Healthy cookies.
It's healthy cookies. But it was they were potato based actually. Anyway.
Must have tasted really good.
Yeah. It was really good for Diane and I to sit there and talk to the students and find out what they felt was happening and sort of direct us a little bit. And then last year we went with the direct. We were trying to do students every 2 years and then farmers every 2 years just to make sure we have that connection.
So the committee will have the that will be reflected in those comments that were made. And okay. Any other questions? Yes, Sean.
What's the cost of the district to support this? I just noticed I talked about their supply for 2 days provided.
Yes.
You know, the cost
we budgeted for 15 release days. The cost of a release day is approximately $250. I think we used 8
so far.
Not very much. No, they don't. But that was something that came up in the recommendations of the subcommittee to try and explore something like that. We've talked a little bit about it, you know, with respect to we recommend that the district investigate ways to model the program similar to co-op while retaining student employment. So there's some pros and cons to that. In a co-op placement that you're taking for credit, you're not supposed to get paid. One of the attractions for students in participating in the harvest is that they make some money.
Okay, that was my next question.
Yes. Yeah.
It could be good for the farmers if you did a co-op.
Yes, maybe the farmers would like that.
Some of them would like that.
Yeah.
But the thing is with some of these kids that go and work in the harvest, this harvest work, the money that they make, puts their money, it's what gets them through the school year.
Yep.
And it also, for some of them, it's the money that gets them, that allows them to play hockey or soccer or whatever, put gas in their vehicle that they have. And some families, their whole families go and they work and the money keeps the families going. And it's, we all have stories that we can tell the people that they have to work their hardest to get free.
Like my, I just asked the budget to I guess that's how I approach it, but I see that's like worth more than money. I was just wondering if there's a cost,
yeah.
And if the students were being compensated because of the scholarship gap there when they're not getting the credit.
Yeah.
So
that's
maybe there's still, there's some of the students are getting compensated one form, especially if they're not getting any sort of credit or recognition.
And we've looked into the credit option a few times, and one of our hosts, it was a few years ago when the debt policy was first put together, they were looking at doing some high school renewal, and I hate to use that again, but they were looking at making quite a few changes to the high school plan, and we were trying to work with that. But that'll come back to what we keep talking about.
Anyone else? Okay. In correspondence, we had a couple of items of correspondence, one from the Gary Elementary Community School and one from the Bath Community School, and they dealt with operational matters, and I've handed those off to David, so we won't be dealing with them right now. But we did receive a letter from the Minister of the Education and Early Childhood Development, confirming that Dara Beaver has been appointed our First Nation representative on the council, and we're hoping that she will join us in the December meeting and maybe even as soon as Monday at the Leo Hayes. So,
can
getting a little touchy here. Just wanted to show the letter.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I was speaking to the chief of Oromocto First Nation, and I know she said she had been talking to Mr. McTimony, but she said, you know, it's such a large district that she said it's too bad they didn't have two representatives because it's such a large area. And I said I would pass on her comments or requests, but anyway, I know it's a legislative matter.
Interesting comment. I think we're down to the public. So we have members of the public here tonight. Do we have comments? Yes. If you would introduce yourself and.
So I can talk about that. My plan was to write to you tomorrow, actually, but maybe this can replace the letter, or if you'd still like to hear from me in writing, that'd be fine. So as we know, I'm not sure of the exact timeline, but there was made a number one major capital priority by District Education Council. An improvement to a major improvement to the K-8 Bath School, and we saw the first year acceptance of a financial commitment to making that improvement. We know that when it comes to the major capital construction projects. On an annual basis, the Legislative Assembly makes those announcements in December, sometimes into January. And I guess when it comes to timing of sharing information and making plans a little more widespread, we have to wait patiently for that announcement to be made in the legislature. We know that well, the DEC has continued to make that commitment of Bath improvements being a high priority. The province of New Brunswick knows that. I say the province because it's both Department of Education and Early Childhood Development as well as DTI, so the province as a whole. And it's a little bit of a waiting game now for that day in the legislature where they stand up and they announce the projects for the coming year. So that's where we are in terms of sharing information at this particular point. A bit of a waiting game now.
That's fair enough, I guess. So we just haven't had any communication, informal communication.
Right.
Our PSSC is anxious, and so are community members.
Sure. There really isn't anything further that can be shared right now. I guess my hope is it's a few weeks away. I know that there are a number of projects that the council has that they're waiting for, but until that magical day in the legislature, there's really nothing that we can report formally to the PSSC or to the public at large. But I anticipate at some point decisions will be finalized by government and then an announcement would be made right on the floor of the legislature. And then we find out about it. We'll get a letter. Sometimes we find out a couple hours beforehand and we might tune in and listen. If you'd like, as soon as we know, as soon as there's any announcement, we could shoot something off to your principal and to you to let you know what we hear, if there's anything related to Bath. That would and we're hopeful that there is. It's a priority of this council for sure. Yeah, my nothing should be read into my change in language. I know that there are times when conversations have to occur with staff from the province. I guess what I could reiterate is the fact that the council has put forward as a major capital construction priority their ideas for improvement or renovation or addition, however it was described on that particular day within the motion. It's really in the hands of government now to make those decisions. The council showed tremendous support to it, and the community was very actively engaged in lobbying for that support. So everybody has done all they can do to make that school a better place. Now we just need to wait for government to make their decisions on what that will look like.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other public comment? You are our groupie.
Yeah.
Don't put that in the minutes. So I see we're coming to an end. It's the longest to date. But as Mr. McTimony mentioned when we started, November is often our longest meeting. So longest night of the year, longest meeting. Hopefully, December will be shorter. Thank you all for being here, and we will all see you again on December the 8th in Fredericton. Oh, and maybe Monday.